Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony. Fat Tony always gets left out.
It's okay.
In this whole circumstance. Maybe it's because you're too big. You've got your own pair of shows now. You got
pair of shows.
Well, he's got Monday with Spice.
Yeah, I knew that.
And he's got Fat Tuesday, which is
Tuesday,
what I call it.
From 8 to 10, I'm after the ladies.
Hey,
you
lady.
Always had Tuesdays.
I always had Mondays.
That's right.
And then Paul came in with me on Monday, and Tuesday nights opened up, so I said, yeah, I'll do Tuesday, too.
Okay. Tuesday. Okay. Soon to be coming to you on a Thursday, 2 a.m. Eastern time. Fat Tony taking over the airwaves on 1010 XL. Ryan O'Halloran's back with us. I don't know if you're going to be cantankerous today. I don't want to pigeonhole you. I think you pretty well pigeonholed yourself on that score.
Well, I think I figured out why I was in a bad mood last week.
You were in a bad mood. You weren't just in a Ryan O'Halloran mood.
You didn't bring any candy last week, so that could have something to do with it.
We're Tony, on the right track.
You're a big breakfast candy guy.
I got home last week from the Super Bowl, and all I did that whole week, and you guys probably did the same, all I did was drink caffeine.
When you're out in Phoenix.
Because you're going nonstop.
Well, caffeine during the daylight hours, yes.
Yeah. Well, for me, then I would have like a freaking latte at 9:30 just to get to the finish line. So I got home and I was like, okay, let's cut down on the caffeine a little bit.
Was that it?
That didn't work.
Clearly. So we all voted. We got you a big gulp there.
We're back to a 32-ounce Dr. Pepper here to start the show.
There you go. As Rick Blue would call that, a draft. Hey. that's a draft of your choice right there. Today, we'll get into we're inside a month from NFL free agency. Today's the 11th of February, March 10th, and it's nice even for a pea brain like mine. I know there are 28 days, so exactly 4 weeks from yesterday, free agency will open up on that Tuesday. I believe at like, what, 3 or 4 in the afternoon,
yes.
Officially, right?
Yeah.
Had the 3-day window before that where you can negotiate. And, look, there's a window right now.
I would say the window starts next Wednesday.
But at least it gives them cover, you know, because when the deals get done now, at 4:02 Eastern time, at least you can have plausible deniability that you had those 3 days to work it out. Unlike the past when theoretically guys were signing at, you know, remember when it started at midnight, right? Midnight Eastern time.
Yeah.
And it'd be like 12:07 and somebody's got a, you know, 4-year contract all worked out. Amazing how that works.
My main story about free agency starting at midnight, I think it was before the 08 season, and I was covering the Redskins, who are always active. And so myself and the co-beat writer, he took the 8 to midnight shift, and I took the 12 to 4 a.m. shift. Basically, one of us was going to stay up, and he was going to do 4 to 8. Well, the Canesworth deal happened at like 4:03 in the morning.
Right.
So, you know, I love the 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, but what that window does now, it just makes tampering legal, is you can talk parameters. And you could basically talk a final number. You just can't exchange papers. So.
You can't agree on the deal. Well, whatever.
But like, you know, a good poll question for like next week, what feedback would be, at what point on that first day of free agency do Jaguar fans get concerned? 4:09? 4:11?
It depends on what happens in those first 9 minutes, but yes, somewhere along the lines.
I mean, last year, I don't know. They signed Zane Beatles in the first 5 minutes of free agency last year.
Yeah,
it was right off the bat.
In the first hour, they signed Beatles. They traded Gabbert. They had Watson in.
Which is still awesome, by the way.
It's like Dave started his conference call. I almost wanted to say congratulations on that.
Yes, and Luke Bawanko, you are the most popular man in Jacksonville. That's who they got with that pick.
And then they got Gerhard Dunn. Later that night, but it'd be interesting what the Jags do when the guys start cutting guys. Are they a little bit active before unrestricted free agent? Because they signed Red last year before the open.
Right. If a veteran gets cut in the midst of his contract and his contract doesn't expire, they automatically become free agents at that moment, and you can go after them. You know, well, or will it be a case of
so they can go get Terrence Cody right now?
Yes. Yes, they could, Tony. And there's a lot of them to get. You know what will happen? 4:05 Eastern time on the 10th, and Ndamukong Suh signs with Seattle. I don't know. He signs with somebody, right? The Jags aren't even trying. Are you kidding me? Why? They had more money than anybody. Why did they just pay $10 million more a year to get this guy? Do you think they will try to make a run at Ndamukong Suh?
From what I've been told, no.
For what reason? Reasons?
I think there's a main reason of let's go two reasons. One, I think he's going to command the kind of dollar that you can probably better allocate X amount of dollars. Could you get three solid players for one Sue?
Right, or two really good players?
Yeah,
something like that.
I think that would be more likely. The second reason is on a defensive lineman, and I'll bring up Haynesworth again, is sometimes defensive linemen, when they get the money, they downshift.
Right.
And I think there may be a feeling that he could be one of those guys.
Some do, and that's you got to feel that individually, because clearly, I mean, it's not the kind of money that Ndamukong Suh stands to make, but Derek Marks got his contract and played the best of his career, you know, after getting a contract. So it does obviously depend on the individual, but those bigger guys, you have a tendency to worry, are they going to get a little bit lazy with the scale, you know, and show up like that. And that, look, I just think it's such a difficult proposition to see him here. Even if you offer him the most money, he's already going to get multiple offers. So the scuttlebutt goes in the $20 million range. How much is enough to get you, you know, how much more do you need to get you to go to a team that's won nine games over the last 3 years?
I mean, I would be shocked if there is even mutual interest. You know, I'd be shocked if the Jaguars are interested, and I would be equally even more stunned if Sue says, okay, I got this offer from here, this offer from the Jags, I'm going to go to the Jags.
People are saying 10 to 14 teams are going to make serious runs at this guy. Now, that number is probably overly exaggerated.
So that means teams closer to the playoffs than these guys.
Pretty much all of them, yeah. Right? I mean, at least based on last year's standing. So I'm with you. Today, we'll take a look at free agency a little bit and some other things as well. Mel Kiper's got a new mock draft out. We'll take a peek at that story up on ESPN Insider. The five teams that are the best fit for Todd Gurley. I know there was a lot of love, Tony, before he tore his ACL.
Right here.
There's a lot of love around Jacksonville for him in the top 10,
yeah.
Right, to the Jaguars. And I didn't think that was a realistic possibility. If he's on the board in the second round, we'll discuss how realistic that possibility may be as well. Chris Wessling of NFL.com, just, you know, there are a million writers out there. They've all got their opinions. But he put together a top 25 list of available free agents. We're not going to agree with all of them, and there are certainly some that I think were omitted out of that list. But today's fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asks you, who is the most high-profile free agent that you think the Jags will actually make an offer to? Not who you want them to make an offer to. Who do you think they'll be in and actually make a concrete offer, or at least have them in for a visit? You know, who will they actively pursue? Which is the most high-profile guy? And obviously, for you out there in listener land, you got to factor in who you think is going to actually make it to free agency. We've discussed that, I think, till we're blue in the face about it a little bit. Guys like Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, no real chance of that kind of thing happening. If you want to get in today, 641-1010, you want to answer the fan feedback question of the day via Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler as well. Wednesday's brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. So a lot of different things to get into today, plus news from around the National Football League. If you want to get in, 641-1010, as always, the phone number. Just getting started, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union, Fat Tony, on a Metro Rooter Wednesday live at Everbank Field here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. There we go. Jaguars today, Metro Rooter Wednesday. Don't need any plumbing issues. Call Metro Rooter at 695-1911. I may have to have them come out. I got a shaky faucet. Last faucet I put in. Not doing so well. Feel like it's going to break and snap off. Going to have one of those scenes where water spurting everywhere. I've already had that, Tony. Had the leak under the house.
Remember
that a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
That was a sewage pipe. Oh, that was horrible.
You were so excited every day to go home.
I really, because they had us tented off. Like, you couldn't go in certain areas of the house. They were cleaning. And fortunately, we had like a week's vacation that coincided with it. We got to get the heck out of Dodge while they went to work, because it was not a, it was not a good time. Let's just say that. And call Metro Rooter. You won't have any kind of issues with your plumbing. 695-1911, our long time Wednesday sponsor. Used to be our long time Tuesday sponsor, but, we appreciate their sponsorship. No matter what day of the week, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Howard, and Florida Times Union, and Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today already, getting a lot of submissions on who the highest profile free agent you think the Jags will pursue, actually pursue, make an offer to, however you want to look at it, you know, try to get him in for a visit. You can pursue a guy and have him show no interest to you right from the outset. You can try to get a guy, schedule him to come in. And, you know, the adage, Ryan, if you really like the guy, you try to not let him get out of the building, right?
Correct.
That's what every team does. If you really, if you prioritize a guy in free agency, the idea is don't let him comparison shop. You know, even if you got to overpay a little bit, you've got an idea of what you're willing to do with your team's monetary situation. So we'll touch on that later on, give you some of our thoughts on the list of available free agents. Also, we'll take a peek at Mel Kiper's latest mock draft. At least it's not the same, one of the same two names, although really, if you've been following the mock draft crowd out there, there's not a large sampling of names that have been pinned to the Jaguars with the third selection overall, provided they don't trade out of that slot. Last week, we haven't talked to you since then. Last, I guess it was Thursday, right? We had Greg Olson, we had Doug Marrone, we had Kelly Skipper, and we had Nathaniel. I'm still calling him Nathaniel until he tells me to call him Nate, but whatever. Hackett.
He's so happy to be here. You can call him anything you want.
He really is a happy guy. And I like his attitude, though. He's like, hey, why shouldn't I be happy, man? He goes, I'm coaching football. Are you kidding me? You know? He knows. We should be happy. We should be a lot happier than we are, by the way, too, for what we do for a living. But let's start with Doug Marrone, because he's an interesting case. Obviously, the way he left Buffalo, you know, I asked him about the perception that he quit. And he said that it was just that. It was a perception. He goes, he doesn't feel like most of the players. Now, I'm sure there are some players felt that way about it, but he's indicated, you know, in talking to some of those guys and just knowing them, he didn't think that that was a widespread feeling. Obviously, it's a weird circumstance. You have one of 32 head coaching jobs in the National Football League. You walk away. There's a feeling at the time that he might have something lined up, or he felt he had something lined up. What was your overall initial impression of talking with Doug Marrone?
Well, short of saying, the only, you know, going into this, he wasn't gonna come off, and certainly in the eyes of the Buffalo fans, he wasn't gonna come off great unless he said, this is why I left Buffalo. I did not get along with this person. I wanted to change this person and this staff member, and I wanted to, with new ownership, I felt I deserved a 1-year extension. He said none of that, nor who knows if any of that's true. A couple of things that stood out were, He says he only talked to the new owners after the season until he resigned. So that means he basically had nothing to do with football operations and whatnot. The impression I get is, and this may sound crazy, is he didn't like being a head coach. He probably, maybe it sounded like he liked, you know, he liked certain aspects of it, but, you know, he saw the opportunity to leave on his own with the $4 million in his pocket, as opposed to going through basically a lame duck year. He had 2 years left on his deal, but a year with new ownership, and the history in this league of new owners keeping coaches they inherited is not good. He saw a spot that didn't have a great quarterback situation. Says, okay, I'm going to be in control of my own destiny. So,
and word was he was unhappy with the decision to give so much up to get Sammy Watkins, too. Whether that's true or not.
No first-round pick this year.
Right. Yeah. Right. So they gave up 2 first-round picks, and then he was opposed to that. And, they went ahead and did it anyway.
And if you're not on board with that kind of deal, then there's trouble, because that is an organization-wide impacting deal that would do what they did to get Watkins. So, maybe, I mean, I think also because there's still money involved, that I think he put a little bit of a personal gag order on himself. I don't think he wanted to give them any excuse to come get it.
That's the sense I got too. Like, what's the point in going through it, kind of thing?
And I thought he would show a little bit of remorse, saying, "Hey, understand why people felt this way, but this is why I want to do it. One thing I would defend him on a little bit is how he let the players know. When Jed Fish got fired 2 days after the season, his quarterback was already on vacation.
Right.
And Gus called Blake Bortles. So I don't necessarily fault him for doing that, because he wasn't going to let guys know before the season was over.
I've said the same thing. I don't think he knew necessarily before the season was over what he was going to do. Yeah, that 3-day window that he had. So you talk to your team. You're going to meet with ownership. You're going to sit down with your family. You're going to assess your situation. We got to make this decision kind of fast. And what are you supposed to do? Reconvene everyone in Buffalo? I didn't think that was as big a deal as it seemed to be either.
And you can't have a 54-way conference call.
And look, granted, some of those 50, however many guys are going to be upset. And they're going to be, look, because what's a coach telling you? You know, we're trying to build something here. We're trying to build a team. They're trying to give you a vision. What's he supposed to tell you? Right up until the moment he walks out the door. Now, I know people say, well, that's kind of sneaky. He shouldn't be talking like that if he's thinking about leaving. But what if he stayed? What if he really didn't know what he was going to do? I mean, you've got to continue to take the steps on a daily basis to continue to build that organization right up until you go.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a player and I was a Bills free agent coming up and Marone had told me in the weeks leading up to it, hey, I want you back. Okay, then you're thinking about, okay, my future's here. I'm going to get a multi-year deal. I don't have to move anywhere. Well, now the coaching, I'm going to be bitter, because that's human nature, and that's fine to be bitter. So there was this kind of exit is unusual, and it's not going to be clean. Moving forward on him, I think he's going to be an interesting guy to see how he coaches on the field, you know, offensive line, Luke Jokel. I mean, he's just starting to look at these guys. He really couldn't get specifics. One thing he liked about it was how the group was so young. He sort of can mold them himself. So the last thing on Marone is one thing it would have been interesting to get his honest take on. Did he really misjudge the market? I mean, did he just say, hey, I'm going to opt out. I got a 500 record. I'm going to go straight to a job.
It's
if
tough.
He thought that.
Right.
Then,
it's tough to expect that, yeah, though, for him to really address that. What is he supposed to say? You know what? I really thought I had that Jets job, and man, I must have really sucked at interviewing for that job.
Or he went there and said, I don't want to work for this nut.
Perhaps, yeah. Right? I mean, so, you know, whatever the case may be, Tony, let me ask you, because I think I've expressed my opinion on it. I'm curious, how did he come across to you? Because we were in there for Greg Olsen, and then they brought Doug Marone, and we sat through his portion. And keep in mind, these are separate press conferences. We're doing one with Doug Marone, while Ryan and the rest of the writers are off with Greg Olsen, and they're rotating these guys through. So you're hearing different questions. The coaches are hearing different questions. They're giving sometimes different answers or different responses the way the questions are rewarded or put forth. So you're going to not necessarily get the same point of view. What did you make of him?
Well, I thought that he carries himself like a pretty confident guy, and had to know the question was going to come at some point about why you're not in Buffalo right now, you know, and giving up that head coaching job. He came across as a guy who was tired of having to even think about it or answer that kind of question, and instead of making it a big deal at that press conference, wanted to move past it, which I can understand from his perspective, wanting to be done with it, wanting it to be behind him. He's now in Jacksonville and going to be the offensive line coach. I think he answered the question as much as I would expect him to answer that kind of question and that kind of
You'd like to get more, but not necessarily expect to get more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually pretty impressed with him, you know.
He's no BS guy when it comes to coaching these guys on his line. I think he's going to be pretty honest, which is what they need.
And I thought, you know, he didn't come across as defensive or anything like that.
No.
He probably did know the questions were coming. You got to know. And it's tough to sit there because I basically said, look, they're calling you a quitter. How do you respond to that? Nobody likes to hear that about themselves, but I thought he, you know, you can disagree with his characterization of it, but I thought he did all right. And quite frankly, I mean, it made me feel like, you know, this guy's a pretty good communicator, you know, and I could see him, like you said, he's going to be no nonsense. I think he's going to command respect. And I asked him, though, the one thing that I thought was interesting, do you need to explain to your new charges, that, you know, the players you're going to be coaching now about the circumstances of your dismissal? Because if you get that reputation around the league, well, this guy is always going to look out for his next opportunity. He's not going to be here for me. You know, can they put their trust into you? And he thought that was, you know, didn't think it was a big deal as far as that went. What do you think?
If I'm a player, I want to know.
I want to know something, right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's a press conference that 20 minutes earlier, Gus Bradley said he didn't ask him about it.
Right.
I mean,
to me, that was like, Gus, what are you doing? Don't say that.
Even, right. I mean, it was really interesting. The head coach, did you talk to Doug Marrone about? No, we didn't talk about that. What? You didn't ask.
Just from the standpoint of every coach in this league is a gossip hound. You want to know.
We all want to know just for the sake of knowing.
Especially,
you know?
When the first time he came into this building, it was to quote unquote just talk ball, end quote. I mean, that's where my conversation would start. Hey, okay, grab your lunch, and then you got to tell me what the hell happened.
Right. How did you get here? Why are you sitting across from me? Although, as I've said many times, if you don't like the situation, if you were a player in the same circumstance as Doug Marrone and you didn't like your situation, and you could take next year's salary and have it fully guaranteed and walk away and pick your next job and have know that there's going to be some interest for you to at least be employed in the National Football League, I think a lot of players would opt to go that route, you know? And so... what's good for the goose can be good for the gander as well in this situation. Let's get a couple calls in. We'll go through some of the other things that you thought you learned by talking with Greg Olson and Nathaniel Hackett and others last week. Let's get Chris up first today on 1010XL. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Real good.
What's up?
I have a question about the defensive coordinator's influence in the draft and also free agency. Because a lot of times they get credit for building the defense or an offense. And I've always believed that great players make a great coach. So when Gus Bradley got a lot of credit for creating the Seattle defense, how much influence does he have in free agency and the draft? Does he say, I like specific players or I like player types?
Well, you look who they signed last year in free agency, and you say Gus has a big influence.
That's the head coach.
Yeah.
He's saying more specific, like Babich. What kind of influence would Babich have? Or Greg Olson, for that matter.
Yeah, I think there's suggestions. I mean, but, you know, ultimately it's, you know, the chain of command is, let's say Greg Olson likes this running back in the third round. Let's say third round. He says I like this guy, and then Gus will probably say, okay, let's recommend that. Then it's up to Dave to make that call.
Right. So, I would think you're asking, you know, in these meetings, and there's going to be all these meetings going. I mean, all these coaches are asked for their input. And as Nathaniel Hackett said, look, you just got to understand the game. You want to go to a place where they want your input. But you also have to be confident enough when they ignore your input. They're going to ignore it 9 times out of 10. That's just the nature of the job. You're not here to answer every single question and have yours be the final deciding voice. You ask Greg Olson, you know, what kind of running back do you feel fits best in what you're trying to do offensively? I mean, he's going to put his input in. But ultimately, Dave Caldwell is the arbiter on all. None of these picks is going to be a Greg Olson pick or a Bob Babich pick. You know, for that matter. I at best, it's a collaborative pick. It's not, they're not going to be Gus Bradley picks either. I mean,
yeah, it's when you get down to the 5th and 6th and 7th round is where you could hear Dave Caldwell say, "Hey, this is a guy Greg Olson
who went
really
to bat for, right?"
Yeah, or and especially a position coach in undrafted free agency where he really liked them, that kind of thing. But when you get when you're at the top 3 rounds right there, you're talking about guys that it's a building wide support for.
All right, let's go back to the line. 641-1010. John the Baptist next up on Jaguars today. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, my brother. This is John the Baptist. How y'all doing?
We're fine, John. How are you? What's going on?
Lovely, lovely. Hey, so check it out, man. He brought up something last year in terms with the free agency. I know that we were really trying to make our offensive line better, especially when we tried to pursue Alex Mack from the Cleveland Browns. My personal opinion, I really see us pursuing the San Francisco 49ers guard. I forget
Mike
how to Iapati. Pronounce it.
Yeah.
Right. I really see us trying to pursue him and also maybe possibly grabbing another lineman in the draft and maybe a veteran wide receiver in the free agency. I know that Reggie Wayne's there, but I think he's possibly on his way out. But maybe somebody like that, you know, because we were trying to go for Emmanuel Sanders last year.
Well, you're right. I think you're okay on a couple of those points. The Iapati thing would have made total sense last year, but I think they would have to cut Zane Beatles to make room for him because you're not going to move Linder. Beatles only plays guard, so that's him. Offensive lineman in a draft, yeah, that makes sense. Veteran receiver in free agency, that makes sense. And Reggie Wayne's an interesting guy because I think he could be like in a second wave of guys. Okay, does he go back to the Colts? Do they have any money left for him? If the Jags come up empty on some of these other guys, they say, "Hey, we have to have a veteran in here." You know, he could be in the second or third wave.
I want to say I read a story that Reggie Wayne said it's Colts or bust for him. Either he's coming back with Indy, or he's done.
Looking at the all time receiving numbers a couple weeks ago, just for whatever reason I was, and Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison are the only two players in that entire list of the top 15, I think it was, that played their entire career for one team. And that was all with the Colts. I would be surprised if Reggie Wayne decided he was going to play anywhere but Indianapolis.
I don't know what more he has to give you. You know what I mean? I mean, what's the end game with Reggie Wayne?
Just a teacher. That's all he would be.
Jerry. There are better players that can help these guys. You don't have to be a 10-time All-Pro or 10-time Pro Bowler to be able to teach a group of wide receivers as young as the Jags are.
Yeah, but I would at least call him.
I don't know. I don't have that much
because it's not going to cost you anything, really.
Yeah, I just think what is he going to do for you? If you're asking for a coach on the field,
115 catches and 14 touchdowns from Blake Bortles' aerial circus.
I get that, but if Reggie Wayne is willing to come to the Jags on a deal that doesn't cost him anything, chances are it means he has had no interest from any other team in the National Football League, right? I mean, if that's the case, I don't see that being a direction they go. That's my opinion on that one. 641-1010 if you want to get in. We'll continue taking your calls coming up in a moment. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues. We'll get Ryan O'Halloran's thoughts on some of the other new additions to the Jaguar coaching staff that we got a chance to meet with last week. It's all coming up right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today, Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're with us in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at gorgeous Everbank Field. It really is, by the way. Although, maybe one less suite upgrade and one more radio studio computer upgrade. I'm going to beat that drum just gently. Tap on that drum for a while. My goodness. I'll put it this way. I'm glad I get here about 90 minutes before we go on the air because I need about 30 of them to reboot the computer on a daily basis. Anyhow, we got a call on the line. Let's talk about offensive line. Let me pick up on something our last caller, John, brought up about Iapati of the San Francisco 49ers. I think it was somebody called into XL Primetime the other day and put forth this idea. I didn't think it was the worst one I've ever heard. Okay, me personally, I want to see Brian Bulaga because natural fit. I think he's the best available guy at the right tackle position. They need help there. This guy suggested, what if they sign Iapati and try Linder at right tackle, trying to get all your best five linemen on the field at the same time? And in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, you know, Zane Beatles, did he play up to that contract last year? I mean, ultimately, maybe it becomes an Iapati-Linder situation. I don't know. I'll put it this way. With a dearth of right tackles out there, if you miss on Bulaga and you don't feel like there's anybody else out there, it's not the worst idea I've heard. What do you think?
No, I mean, because it's an idea. That's what we're looking for at this point. I'm always wary of moving guys, moving a second-year guy like Linder.
Especially when he played so well at that spot.
Yeah, when you think he's a long-term guy at that spot, you know, I would say let's think outside more of the box and try to solve right tackle. Let's not screw up right guard and take our chances at right tackle. So, I mean,
Iapati would not be a screw up. You wouldn't think based on his track record.
You know, and I think also you have to weigh in. Okay, how much will this impact the player? I mean,
would it impact Linder? Would he have to start, comfort level?
Would he have to start over again?
Yeah. To some degree, I'm not saying I expect that to happen. I just think out of some of the suggestions that I've heard, you know, what the Jags' plan should be in free agency, I don't think it's the craziest thing out there, you know? Because again, if you're going to address that offensive line situation, okay? Well, if you want to go with a veteran because you've got so many young guys already on that side of the football, I think your options are limited for a plug and play right tackle.
I mean, chances are Austin Pastor could be your right tackle.
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, is there an evident upgrade out there? So maybe they don't go. Look, maybe they try to take a shot at Bulaga, maybe they come up empty on Bulaga, right? And they don't want to go one of those other routes that we're talking about. So maybe they go with more of a mid-level veteran guy who started some games in the National Football League to push Beatles and to at least push Pastor if they re-sign him.
I think the most likely thing they do is they – you know, the big thing they're banking on is year one to year two improvement from the guys in-house, those four guys, the addition of Doug Marrone helping them. And also, I think their plan all along has been, hey, sign a veteran guy, right tackle, who started some games and have a training camp competition between him and Pastor. You know, all these national pundits say, well, Blake Bortles needs to, you know, they need to address the offensive line. It's tough to address the offensive line. That's why they're
not wrong, though. I think they do need to address it.
They say, well, they got to sign free agents. They got to use high draft picks. They have other needs. You know, they've allocated those resources right now. They have a second overall pick at left tackle. They have a $30 million left guard. They have a third round pick they traded up for at right guard. And they seem like they want to give Bowenko a shot at center. That leaves right tackle. You're not going to draft a right tackle at three.
Would you draft a Cedric Abui or somebody like that who was at one point talked about as a top 10 pick who got hurt, who's available maybe in the second round?
Potentially. I mean, I'm probably alone on this train of drafting a running back in the second
round. I don't think you're alone by far, but I mean, look, what if the value doesn't match up with the available players right there?
I think that's where you maybe run into a Marquise Lee thing where you can't believe a guy's there, then you probably would jump on that.
Right, you're talking about with the offensive tackle
option,
something like that, right? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. In fact, I think if they trade down at all, I still think it's a possibility. If let's say Cleveland want to come up, like Cleveland decides we got to have Marcus Mariota, we're going to start over at quarterback. We need a guy with
that would be awesome,
a spotless reputation. Right? They got the two first round picks.
They have the two first round picks, and their quarterback's coach is working with them right now.
Right, who's actually preparing him for the NFL draft. Okay.
Well, then that brings
or their it, quarterback's so, coach to be.
Anyway. So what is that? That would be what? Six, what is Cleveland at 7 or 8?
I want it to like 12 and 19, something like that.
So, you know, it would take both those picks and something.
Oh, of course. But I'm saying if you had a deal like that, I think that all of a sudden opens up a wealth of other positions that you might go towards.
Yeah, I mean, because that if you have extra if you have an extra couple picks there, that allows you to be. Plug this.
Let's get Brian up next here on Jaguars Today, 641-1010, the phone number. Hi, Brian, how are you?
Hey, Mike, how you doing, bud?
Good, what's up?
Well, quick question. I'm not a Jags fan, but I just have a quick, I guess, draft question or philosophy in general. I'm a Redskins fan, and I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have us taking a right tackle, an offensive tackle in the top five. Here's my problem with that. I mean, we have Trent Williams at left tackle. How many NFL teams run down that road where they're going to end up using a top five pick for a right tackle who, if ends up being the guy you think he's going to be, is going to end up wanting getting paid left tackle money. So you're going to end up either losing him or, you know, moving over to left and then cutting like an Arcus Trent. It's kind of like what the Jags did with Jokel. Either, you know, they knew they were going to get rid of Monroe. Or would they have drafted Joker? You know what I'm saying? I just don't know that how many teams can really afford two left tackle salaries on the line.
Redskins at 4 or 5?
5.
If any mock draft you see the Redskins taking a right tackle at 5, I would ignore. They need a pass rusher who can play outside linebacker because, as you know, Brian Arakpo probably not going to be back. I mean, I've seen Shane Ray connected to them a lot. Now you see Mel's got them with the Jags, so I think they need, just like the Jags need to score more points, the Redskins got to learn how to stop people. So they need to add on defense.
Yeah, look, and you could talk about this guy's going to want left tackle money. Well, first of all, he's going to be locked up to a deal with a four-year contract and a fifth year on the club option, right? So he can want whatever he wants. He's not going to get it for a long time, okay? You can't even renegotiate those contracts for 3 years. 3 years is a long time in the NFL. Yep. Who knows how Trent Williams would be playing 3 years from now? You know, who knows how the new guy would work out? I don't think it's the cost. It's that cost prohibitive if you want to go that route. When you look at some of these guys, I think at least most of them get drafted with an eye on eventually moving them to left tackle, probably after a year at the most. But you see a lot of guys come in now drafted and maybe play left tackle. They play right tackle for a year. Now, I'm not talking about in Jokel's case. That was a different set of circumstances. But when they feel they're not maybe ready for that side, they come in, there's less blindside pass blocking responsibility, that kind of thing. But I don't think the cost, you know their personnel, Ryan, better than I do in terms of the Skins. But
I mean, they have an elite left tackle right now with Trent.
Right.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of other directions they could go at five that makes sense.
If you need pass rush, and this is a good year to get pass rush in the top 10 of according to all the pundits, you know, and you talk about Ray, in addition to Gregory Williams, Dante Fowler, and probably several others that will contend for at least top 15 status.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Jags, if that's what they want to prioritize, they can obviously get one later on in that top 15. It's all a matter of which player is going to be on the board there that a team will want to trade up and get.
Give you Mel Kiper's top 10 right now. He put it out this morning. His mock draft 2.0 just actually came out about an hour ago. Jameis Winston going number one to the Buccaneers. Not going to get into all the detail of all these selections. Although you probably did notice Derek Brooks said, you know, basically, if you take Winston, I will make him my personal project. Derek Brooks, obviously longtime Seminole / Buccaneer, and wants to see, you know, a product of Florida State system as well as a new Buccaneer excel. I'm sure Derek Brooks, he seems like the kind of guy that would do that with Marcus Mariota if he felt like it was needed, but in particularly in that case, probably makes the Bucs feel a little bit better if they'd have Derek Brooks kind of in their back pocket on that score. Leonard Williams going to Tennessee with the second pick. This is, again, according to Kiper's latest mock draft. And then Shane Ray, here's what I don't think fits about what they're talking about with the Leo with Shane Ray. Shane Ray's 6'2". Okay, he's 6'2", 240, which is more stout than a guy like Randy Gregory. But Randy Gregory at 6'6", with those long arms, also in that same weight range, he feels like he can put on another 30 pounds and play very comfortably at 270. But you can't, you know, teach or replicate that size. You are what you are. And Shane Ray's always going to be a guy, and you think, well, 6'2 is plenty big enough. Dwight Freeney wasn't, you know, that big. And that's true for the most part, but you better be exceptional because those left tackles with those long arms get that leverage on you, and that's such a big part of why it's not the fact that you're 6'6". It's the fact that you come with the arms proportionate to being 6'6", and you can get off blocks a lot easier. So, you know, I don't know. Shane Ray, the one criticism I've heard of him that's kind of interesting is he played behind Coney Ealy and Michael Sam at Missouri a year ago, you know, came off the bench behind those guys. Michael Sam basically is not able to make an NFL roster so far, at least on an active roster. Coney Ealy, I think, did okay for himself.
Yeah, he was fine
this year. But they got Amari Cooper going fourth, Randy Gregory out of Nebraska going fifth to the Washington Redskins, Mariota going to the Jets at six. Danny Shelton, defensive tackle out of Washington, going to Chicago. Eric Armstead, another defensive end. This one out of Oregon, going to the Atlanta Falcons.
There's the first guy I've never heard of. It took me to the seventh pick.
Spell his first name, if you could, for me.
A-R-I-K.
A-R-I-K, okay. That's right. Alan was going to be stumped on that.
I was going to go A-double-R-I-K.
There you go. And then you've got Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, the offensive lineman. Some think he'll end up as a guard, but maybe, I don't know, if you call him the consensus best lineman in the draft, whatever. Andres Pete, also a lineman out of Stanford, rounding out the top 10.
I never liked those. It feels odd, the top consensus lineman in the draft. Well, if he doesn't work out a tackle, he can play guard. That's scary language. Right. That's such scary language for anybody looking at taking that guy.
I guess, but, I mean,
that's what you should say about a guy you take in the third round.
Right.
Yeah, I suppose. But if you felt like the guy is going to be a dominant guard. And I'm not saying that that's what their scouting staff would feel.
Okay, well, teens then.
Okay,
but I mean, Potty was white.
But if you're sitting there at nine, You might not have the luxury. We'd prefer to pick this guy at 17.
I'm saying, like, if you're a team that's seriously considering, if I was a fan of a team that was seriously considering drafting that guy, that kind of language attached to him before the draft even gets started scares me as a fan, potentially, with what that guy's going to be. I get that Dallas drafted Jonathan Martin knowing that he was a tackle that could play guard, and their intention was probably to play him at guard for the first couple years of his career, and he's worked out really well there. I think that's different than drafting a guy that's supposed to be a tackle and saying, well, if it doesn't work at tackle, we can play him at guard. That's a different story. That kind of story scares me on the offensive line in the draft.
That's your team that you have to worry about there. Let's go to Johnny up next. 641-1010. Good morning, Johnny. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Hey, this a quick thought. The Joko situation. In all fairness to him, I mean, he still got a lot of development that's got to take place with him. But if the brass over there, if they go offensive line with that third pick in the coming draft, does that kind of signal a vote of like no confidence in the management group as far as in evaluation of these players? I don't see that situation.
Yeah,
personally, I don't.
Right,
it would be a vote of no confidence in yourself.
Or not necessarily vote of no confidence. It would be saying,
we screwed up,
right? But that doesn't mean you wouldn't be confident in the next guy. I don't think that's even in the realm of possibility. So
I agree.
If you're sitting there at three. Now, again, you trade back in that 10 range and you pick up an extra first rounder plus whatever in some kind of trade scenario, well, then, I think your options fluctuate because the value might fit better there, and maybe you do draft a guy there. Let's go to John up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, John.
Yeah,
how are you?
Doing good. Hey, I got a question. Offensive lineman. This is not a first rounder, but do you think Cameron Irving at FSU might slide to the second or maybe even the third round? I mean, he's got experience at, quality player at two positions on the offensive line.
Really at three positions. I mean, he's played guard, tackle, and really excelled at center. I think he could be there at the top of the second round. I'd be very surprised if he's there at the top of the third round. I think he could be a first-round pick. He's a very versatile guy, and it would be a question of, what are you – drafting for at that spot. I don't know if Cam Irving, despite the fact being an exceptional athlete, is, his career may be on the interior of the offensive line. And frankly, I don't want to see the Jags spend a first or second round pick on an interior offensive lineman. I think they've got enough potential with what they've got. They can reinforce that with mid-level free agency that don't spend your top of the second round pick on a guy just because of his versatility. But he's a good player. Some teams in need of a center who's very athletic and who's got that versatility, can play a lot of spots. I think he could be worth that spot. I just think for the Jags and all the needs that they still have, I'd feel better about using that resource in another direction. Coming up this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL. We'll take a look at who ESPN pens as the top five best fits for running back Todd Gurley out of the Georgia Bulldogs as well. And we'll do it all coming up in a minute. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history is brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Let me tell you what happened to this date in football history. Not a whole hell of a lot, all right? Not even going to go through the list of birthdays. If you're someone out there with a birthday today, you're just as significant as anyone on this list. Bill Parcells did take over as head coach of the Jets in 1997 on this date. Parcells, I believe, every stop he made, where did he go? He coached the Giants. He coached the Cowboys. He coached
the Patriots, the Jets,
and the Dolphins, right? Yes. He wasn't the coach of the Dolphins.
He was like the president of the Dolphins.
But basically, every stop he went where he had significant say over the roster, which was pretty much all of them, he had him in the playoffs by year two, mm-hmm. at least. And I believe he came in when the Dolphins were coming off like that 1-15 season,
yeah.
right? And had him as a 10-win team a couple of years later with Chad Pennington. Had the Jets even in the AFC title game in 98 with Vinny Testaverde. 10-0 at one point, Tony. It was the last good moment for the New York Jets. So that's what happened on this date in football history. The Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality fencing product for you at a competitive price. So, of course, give you unsurpassed customer service. Get a free professional estimate from the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville at your convenience by calling 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Seattle Seahawks and quarterback Russell Wilson have begun discussions on an extension for Wilson. Seattle Seahawks GM John Schneider joined ESPN 710 in Seattle yesterday and said that the team will do what's best for the organization. That doesn't mean you do exactly what everybody else has done around the league. He also went on to say that the team has talked to Russell and he understands that as well. So anyone thinking he's going to get $20 million a year, think again. It sounds like they're conditioning it for to not be that kind of contract for Russell Wilson. The Pittsburgh Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger have also begun contract negotiations. Big Ben is entering the final year of an 8-year, $102 million extension he signed in 2008 and seems to be getting better with age. Roethlisberger may have had his best season of his career last year statistically, setting career highs in yards, completions, and percentage. The new deal is expected to be in the nine-figure area as well, despite him already being 33 years old. And we mentioned this story briefly, but Kevin O'Connell, who is slated to be the next Cleveland Browns quarterbacks coach, is currently tutoring Marcus Mariota as he gets ready for the draft. It's known within league circles that Kevin O'Connell is going to be taking that job with Cleveland, but right now still tutoring Marcus Mariota. And I know Pro Football Talk had some quotes from an anonymous GM from around the league that was basically like, are we serious about this? We're going to let this guy, it's clearly kind of outside the boundaries of what should be happening.
The Browns have not announced that they're going to hire this guy. Reports have indicated, and, you know.
I thought they did hire him.
They haven't yet. And, hey.
Reports have been out that say the Cleveland Browns are going to hire Kevin O'Connell, and the Browns are doing nothing to dispute it.
Okay, like, but is it their job? Do they have to dispute that? I mean, to me, if they haven't hired him, yes, it's a loophole, but I don't consider that cheating. Okay, there's a lot of cheating going on in sports these days.
I wouldn't even say it's shady. I mean, it'd be one thing if the Browns had the number one pick or had traded up in that spot to get Mariota, but right now it's just sort of interesting.
Right. I guess it is, but if they ultimately make a move to get Mariota, let's say, if he slides a few spots.
I mean, if next week in Indy, if Mariota is walking through the convention center with a Cleveland Browns playbook under his
what about some athletic shorts, right? By the way, backpack. That means nothing with high school seniors. They'll wear anybody's athletic shorts.
Is he getting texts from the GM about what he should throw next at the combine?
In all seriousness, no. Are we in the golden age of cheating right now in sports in general? Some little league team. Don't tell me that everybody involved with that team didn't know that they were blatantly cheating the rules of little league. I was telling you guys back in like 1980, man, and when I played little league, 81, I was 12 years old. Everybody in the league knew exactly who was eligible to be on your all-star team and hence to try to make a run for Williamsport, right? And every kid knew that. That was decades ago, way before it became popular. They used to play like the championship game, I think, on Wide World of Sports, right?
Saturday afternoons. Yeah.
But that was it. Yeah. That's all you got.
That's the only game.
Now you got every game practically.
Which is just ridiculous.
Oh,
I watch none of it.
All right, Little League World Series Spelling Bee. What you got?
Spelling Bee.
Spelling Bee. Yeah.
I watch both. Honestly, I do.
I don't know what is more bothersome. I guess I'd go
they
with...
They both are bothersome, but if you're lesser of two evils...
You'd go Spelling Bee. Yeah. Tony likes them both. I would probably go Little League World Series because at least it's a sport.
Same here.
All right? I mean, let's have math test next, right? Let's go math quiz.
Well, I definitely
wouldn't be participating. I would watch that, too.
I don't want to watch it on ESPN.
Not on ESPN, necessarily.
That's where you watch it.
Yeah, but, you know, when is the Spelling Bee?
Don't know.
Summer.
Yeah, summer, who cares? Who cares when they're showing at 7 o'clock on ESPN in the middle of the summer?
It's I'm
fine
be
with it.
Better.
I'm fine with it.
Ah, I don't know.
I enjoy it. I watch it. I like watching those kids that have obviously been reading a dictionary since they were 3 years old, trying to remember
I'm just,
how to spell
and you use that in
the
sentence.
In the final round of the spelling bee, I'm just rooting for the kid who's not homeschooled.
Right.
You know, it's like 17-syllable word. Can you use it in a sentence? Because I thought it was the other 17-syllable word that is so similar to that one that you just read right there. All right. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board. ESPN, I'm so predisposed to be a hater, but the Steve Munch. You ever heard of Steve Munch? That's a guy who wrote this article for ESPN Insider. It said best team fits for Todd Gurley.
And who is this guy?
I don't know. He writes for ESPN Insider. I just told you. He's probably saying, who the hell are these guys on 1010XL? That's his prerogative. But we've got the mic right now, Mr. Munch. But before I read who those teams were, I said, I can just predict what's going to happen here. He's going to say, you know, he's going to say Seattle and New England because it'd be that kind of savvy move that a veteran team at the end of the first round that doesn't have many holes will do with the opportunity to stash him, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to say Indy because they have no clear-cut answer there. And you could predict a few of them. I say he's going to go right past the Jags and never even consider them, and I should have given him more credit. Mr. Munch was started off just as I expected, Tony. Indy Colts at number 29. Obvious reasons. By the way, to tie this all in, what you're talking about with the Cleveland Browns dysfunction, I was telling you guys, somebody, he's like a player development guy who left like a year ago in Cleveland. I saw him give some comments today about, you know, Josh Gordon's psychological makeup and how you can't come hard at him right away. You got to earn his trust and then you can coach him hard and you can say whatever you want about that. But he said that's the thing that Gordon responds to, he said he used to show up at the Cleveland Browns facility first thing in the morning, and his greatest hope was, would he see Gordon and Trent Richardson's cars there? Like, would they bother to show up that day? I mean, so Trent Richardson, obviously, we saw at the end of the season with the Colts, kind of had some issues, and he said it was a family emergency, and indicators are something was brewing more than that for a while. But so he's been a pain in the butt, I guess. And moral of the story is somebody's trying to trade their top three pick from just a couple of years ago. It's buyer beware, is it not? I mean, who does that?
Right.
Even if you can get a first-round pick for him, it's a much later pick. You already invested a higher pick. So the Colts at 29 definitely makes sense. The Seahawks and the Patriots at 31 and 32, you're going to hear that. Do you're sick of hearing that. And then he lists the Jags as the very next team with the number 36 pick and, you know, try to fit it into the range, also out of the Vikings with their second round pick. So the Jags, this is where I saw this number, Ryan, tied for sixth in rushing yards per carry last season. How do we explain this? What universe did this occur in?
Because they didn't have, because they didn't have a lot of explosive runs.
Correct.
And they didn't have like a 3 or 4 80-yard runs.
Right.
So
they didn't have many 80-yard games, did they? I mean, just I guess, you know, ultimately maybe they didn't run it all that much, right? There were times when they
were. That would be my guess, is that it was skewed because of that. I'm going to try and look up something. But, yeah, I thought I'd seen that a couple weeks ago, and I was like, seems high.
It didn't seem right, did it? And
the 21st part, that seemed high,
too. The 21st in rushing yards per game as a team, that seemed very high as well. And they were 31st in time of possession. I disagree with this. He says Toby Gerhardt could be a cap casualty after a disappointing injury-riddled season. I guess it's possible, but, you know.
It doesn't seem to be on the radar right now.
No, Dave Caldwell, I actually asked him about Gerhardt and back in November, and he said, you know, they're comfortable with what he makes, even if he ends up being primarily a third down back on this football team.
Jaguars had 30 runs of at least 12 yards last year.
Is that, I mean, by comparison's sake, is that?
I mean, they gave up 33.
I wonder how much you factor in the fact that what Blake Bortles was fourth in the league in quarterback rushing.
Yeah,
right.
Second on the team in rushing.
So that probably skews that number as well, because every time Blake took off, he's close to picking up a first down, it seemed like. You know, goes on.
Bortles at 7.5 per carry.
7.5 per carry, yeah. Right. So if you roll that out and you just look at running backs, I would imagine that number is dipping significantly for the Jags. But they go on to say, you know, just looking at the Jags running back core, nobody is the full-time guy in their view, and Gurley, they say, is the kind of back who can wear out defenses over the course of a game and, more importantly, help Blake Bortles with his ability to set up the play-action pass. Gus Bradley reiterated last week they want to run it first, right, and set up the run. I know you have been saying it for a while, but I don't think you're the only one who thinks that if one of those guys, a Gurley or a Melvin Gordon, is there, that he's going to be a strong consideration. The question is, how far down the list do they go? Do they go with a Jay Ajayi out of Boise State or somebody like that?
The Gordon thing would be interesting if we talk about that previous scenario where they trade out of three and pick up
12 and 19, I think.
That's right. Gordon makes total sense.
Yeah, like with the 19th pick kind of thing. You get a lineman on one side of the ball or the other at 12, something like that, or whatever, you know, depending on what they do in free agency.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they've already shored up the offensive line at that point. It is a deep group of pass rushers this year, it appears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also, at least seen some places, a deep group of receivers. Okay, well, that helps the Jags because they don't need one.
Right.
So teams will be picking off receivers, and their guy could fall to them.
Every mock draft now has five or six, maybe even seven receivers going in the first round, you know? So you're right. You wouldn't think they're going to go that early. I mean, the Amari Cooper card gets played a lot on Twitter, you know, and I don't.
That's a fun card to play.
It's a fun card to play, but is even in the realm of possibility in your mind with the third pick, let's say it goes Winston and Leonard Williams, okay? And then nobody is offering you anything to move up to get Mariota. Either they don't think he's worth it or they're not willing to pay what you want. So you're stuck at three.
I think that's who's Raiders are at four.
Okay, correct.
Okay, so you cross them off of Mariota. Five is Washington.
You'll likely cross them off. Yeah. The Jets at six are...
So if I'm a team, I want to get ahead of the Jets.
No question.
So
maybe
you have those three teams bargain with each, you know.
Right, right. If you say, you know what, the problem with that, I've always thought, you sit there and let's say you want to jump the Jets, right? You think, well, we don't need to get to three. We need to get to five, okay? Well, meantime, what if the Jets go, let's get to three.
We got to get to three.
Right?
You go to the top.
You would hope. At least you're going to start there, especially if it's a quarterback. But going back to Amari Cooper. Any chance that under that scenario, Williams off the board and you can't get a trade deal worked out?
I'd say a small – it would be fascinating to see how they spread these guys around. I would be very surprised.
I would too, especially if you really are a team that wants to run the ball more.
Yeah.
You spent 2 second-round picks and you got a great find in Allen Hurns last year who can help your team.
And the thing you've been saying all offseason is how you want to add experience on offense.
You would think.
Not continue to add young guys.
And with that, today's fan feedback question of the day, who is the most high-profile free agent that you think the Jags will actually show interest in, make an offer to, have them in for a visit, whatever? Not saying who you would like to see them sign. Who is the one that you would consider the most high-profile guy who's going to be available that you think the Jags will make a play for? Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Glad you're with us today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Ryan headed to the Combine next week. We're flying out Tuesday to Indianapolis?
Yep, Tuesday night.
Okay. Have you covered the Combine several times in the past?
Yeah, I think this is like 8 or 9.
Do you get much out of it? I mean,
it's pretty good. I mean, last year, I think, outside of they brought probably 200 players in, and the combined coach GM podium count was like over 50. So a lot of things you can pursue, you know, talk to if any local kids, you know, talk to the big guys. So it's gotten so much bigger than when I first attended it that it's not as, it's not as beneficial as in terms of getting one-on-two or one-on-three interviews.
Right.
Everything's just a gangbang.
Right.
But it's still one of the must-see events.
Who else you guys sending? Just you or Hayes going to go?
Just me this year.
Yeah.
So
you're up to it.
I enjoyed last year when Hayes came along because that means I had to do half the work.
Why do you think Tony goes to the Super Bowl with me? We're copacetic on that score. Me and Tony feel the same way about each other. All right, let's take a look at this list of free agents that NFL.com put out. I say NFL.com. It's Chris Wessling writing for NFL.com. Everyone's got, you know, their own opinions on it, but he put together a list of the top 25 best available free agents, at least as of today, knowing that some of these guys are going to get franchise tagged. Now, Brian Bulaga doesn't make his top 25. He would be high on my list for the Jaguars to pursue, but I'll just run through these names. You tell me, first of all, I'll skip Des Bryant and Demaryius Thomas because there's no way in hell that they're not going to stay with their teams. They're going to get franchised at the very worst, at least I would feel that would be the case. But starting with Ndamukong Suh at the top, yes or no, will the Jaguars pursue on these guys? Suh, I think, is unlikely to get franchised because that figure is going to be like $26 million for him. So would they pursue?
No.
No pursue on Suh. Tony?
Probably not.
Probably
not.
I think they may be interested, but it doesn't.
If there are
going to
be
10
teams involved, they're not going to be.
Well, here's the thing, too, on that. Like,
bidding
let me
on
say,
that.
If it turns into a bidding war, if I'm Dave Caldwell, I don't got time for that. I need to
move
get
on to your next thing, right? Instead of waiting on this guy.
I'm not going to base my whole plan on maybe getting a guy. I got to make sure I get some definite.
Well, I think if you're going to go after a guy like that, then you say, here's my offer. We're coming strong. You know, it's kind of a take it or leave it type situation.
Yeah, you almost have to be told early.
Right. Yeah. And maybe you would. Look, you've got the legal tampering period and you've got the illegal tampering period. So you'll know if he's got interest to hear one way or the other. Justin Houston. I mean, I don't think he gets free.
I don't think he gets free either.
If he did, why wouldn't you be interested in Justin Houston?
If he did, I'd throw money at him.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Des Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, I think they'd obviously be heavily in pursuit of either one or both. Not, you know, they wouldn't land both of them. You know what I'm saying. They take whichever one they could get, but they won't be free either. Now,
I'm getting ready to start yes on four of the next five guys.
Four of the next five. All right. Jason Pierre-Paul.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you go after Jason Pierre-Paul? I mean, my goodness. Julius Thomas.
I think he could be one of their top two targets.
I agree with you. And I'm really a little bit surprised. I've watched Julius Thomas play a bunch over the last couple of years. And yes, Peyton Manning makes everyone's job easier.
He's good.
He's pretty damn good, man. I mean, he can move, you know, he can run.
I don't need him to block.
He's shifty. He's got good hands. He's tough to match up with on the goal line. He's been a great red zone target. I'm not bringing him in here to block. I'm with you.
For the Jags' perspective, that should be the easiest negotiation is Broncos won't, you know, I call Julius Thomas and I say to his guy, whatever the highest paid tight end in the league is, we're going to pay you X amount more. We're going to make you the highest paid tight end in pro football by a large margin. Boom, get it done.
Would you do that, though?
If I'm the Jags, he would be the 402 guy signing.
Oh, the 402. I got you. And he may be. You know, he may be a guy that they pursue to that degree. I can still see. If they're able to work out a long-term deal with Demaryius Thomas and Peyton Manning indicates to them clearly that he's coming back, he passes the physical, I could see them franchising Julius Thomas in that scenario. Because if you're going to bring back Manning, and you got to figure now it's on a year-to-year, and really if he comes back in Denver, you got to assume this is the last go-round for him.
So get Thomas for one more
One more year, and then you can cut him loose. Manning's number comes off the books. Thomas comes off the books. You can reshuffle the deck after that. Mike Iapati?
No.
Okay, we talked about him a little bit earlier, because that's not as glaring an area of need for the Jags. Randall Cobb.
Yes.
How many tears will be shed when Randall Cobb either A, gets franchised, or B, if he were to sign somewhere else, or at C, if the Jags, for whatever reason, didn't show interest, which would surprise us all? Many?
A, would be, if he gets tagged, okay, that's...
Nothing you can do about it.
B, if he signs somewhere else... would be dependent on C, if they didn't show interest, it'd be disappointing.
Or did they make a big enough offer, you know, because you're going to have to pay to get Randall Cobb, and he's going to impact your return game as well, Tony. I think we all agree they'd make a play for him.
Oh, yeah.
Devin McCourty, absolutely. Don't think he'll. At this point, he's more likely to be franchised, I think, than half the guys we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I would say him and Dez are the two top tag.
Yeah,
Demaryius.
Whether it's tag or a long-term extension, I couldn't see any of those three getting, and Justin Houston as well.
Yeah, and the most likely thing is when the tagging period opens Sundays, they do that, which just gives them more time to an exclusive negotiated window.
Correct.
So
correct.
I think Julius Thomas does hit the market because the history of guys getting extended before they're able to get tagged. doesn't happen a lot. So let's say the Broncos franchise tag Demaryius on Sunday. That gives them 3.5 weeks to
right.
do the deal, which would be a very complicated deal. I think that's why I think it's really possible Julius does hit the market.
If they have to tag Thomas from the out, Demaryius from the outset. Number 10 is DeMarco Murray.
I mean, 2 weeks into it, if he's still out there, I'd say, hey, what's going on?
Right.
So, but
right.
other than that, nothing money wise.
And personally, I'm not as concerned, you know, with DeMarco Murray's workload. I mean, I didn't see it really impact him a whole lot. And I realize usually, historically, that impacts you the next year. But he's pretty young, man. And
no, he's pretty young, but you are talking about a guy. That's the first time we've seen him in his career stay healthy.
And he broke his hand.
Right. And
but that doesn't bother me.
That many carries. Apparently, the Cowboys were offering something, what, north of just $4 million a year at some point this year, something in there, which would make him among the top five or six paid running backs in the league. Look, the Jaguars aren't spending that kind of money on a running back.
All right, let's move on. Jerry Hughes of the Buffalo Bills.
No.
He's
he has an offer on the table, I read.
From Buffalo?
Yeah.
Now, they were playing. Did they move back to a 4-3 last year?
If they did, they're moving back to a 3-4.
Is that
with Rex?
Right, that's true. And I think they did move back. I want to say
they were
4-3
last year,
right? Because Brandon Spikes was supposed to be like the middle mm-hmm. linebacker there, and they were going to move. Who was the rookie? Kiko Alonso last year to the weak side.
Yep,
I think is what they were going to do, and then he got hurt. So no on Hughes. Why no on Hughes? Just don't think he's good enough. Don't.
Yeah, you probably do better. You draft a guy for a lot less and pay him a lot less.
True on that. Jason Worlds of Pittsburgh. I don't think they. You know, he's a 3-4 outside pass rusher.
Yeah, he's a big guy. You know, he's. Let me see what his 6'2", 262. It doesn't fit what they do. So, no.
Okay. Tony?
Nope.
I didn't think so either. Jared Odrick, I don't think, you know.
Older guy.
Right. And if you're not going to go after Sue, I mean, I can understand going after Sue if you think he's the best guy in the league at that spot. If they're confident that Miller and Marks eventually return to their form, I don't think you're necessarily going that direction because they got some young guys they like. Pernell McPhee of the Baltimore Ravens, they just list him as pass rusher. Again, you start getting down how far, you know, outside of, put it this way, outside of Jason Pierre-Paul and maybe Sue if they did show some initiative, do you see them going the pass rush route in veteran free agency?
Man, I think it's possible because he fits their philosophy here. He is 26 years old, so he's an ascending player. He had his career high 7.5 sacks, and he's 280 pounds. So he could probably play inside a little bit on some pass rush stuff. So I think in the front of their mind, they have to prepare on the defensive line, if not high in the draft and free agency. Do they have to add a guy in case Marks isn't ready? Miller's slowed in, you know, at the beginning of the season. So maybe add another body there.
Terrence Knighton's not coming back to Jacksonville.
No.
Right. Interesting, though, that he's the 15th ranked guy. I couldn't blame him when they let him go.
No.
He didn't play like that kind of guy when he was here. Jeremy Maclin.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think, right. I mean, you're gonna look for a pass catcher here. I'd maybe prefer Torrey Smith, but regardless, Torrey Smith is in there as well. Again, yes, with a certain group of wide receivers, right, down to a certain level. We looked at one ranking on Monday that basically – once you get Pat, yeah, Dez Demaryius, you got Randall Cobb, no particular order. Randall Cobb, Maclin, Torrey Smith, Crabtree was sixth. Cecil Shorts, they felt, was the seventh best. I saw ESPN doing this yesterday on one of their NFL live shows or whatever, and they had Cecil ranked at the same spot, seventh among available free agent wide receivers with the same six guys ahead of him. You get to a certain point, you know, if you don't want him back, and I don't know if they will, is there anybody else really out there worth pursuing?
Yeah, man, that's why. I mean, he could be a fallback option. But what would be interesting from the Jags' perspective is if their strategy on receiver is to go back on our point on Cobb. Would you be disappointed if they didn't pursue him? Well, they may not make the decision. They're not going to because they're going to put all their efforts into saying, hey, we feel Maclin is a great fit, maybe a little less money.
Perhaps.
And then, okay, and I say, okay, I can't fault that. Just get one of them.
Right.
You know, instead of negotiating with all three of those guys, concentrate on maybe two or even one of them.
The thing about Cobb, though, he just all of a sudden your return game potentially becomes top notch.
Home run signing.
Quickly here, Brandon Graham, Philly.
No.
All that much to impress me, even though, what was he, 13th overall pick. Greg Hardy, I don't know why he's... Right, but why is... Do you think the Jags would pursue him? You would want to see him pursue him. Do you think they would?
No.
I don't either.
I don't think it makes a lot of business sense because when you offer him a contract, you don't know if he's going to even be available.
Right.
I mean,
you got to assume he's going to get a 6-game suspension to start the year.
So it's like, I want to know from the league office, hey, if I sign this guy, when is he eligible to play? And they say 6 games. Okay, then you can at least move forward. But
by the way, this list is a little kooky if you're just talking about pure talent. He's top 5 or 6 on this list.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of his impact as a player. Byron Maxwell, the Seahawks.
No.
Why no?
I think they feel they're okay at corner.
Okay. C.J. Spiller.
I would kick the tires.
I think
it
depends on how – you're obviously going to get a lot of input from Marone and Hackett on that, you would think. Mm-hmm. Nick Fairley.
No.
He's always seems like he's got motivation issues, right? They're always talking about, is this guy going to keep his weight down to where it needs to be?
And how much of his production is because he's had Sue lined up next to him?
What about Arakpo?
I wouldn't. I don't think he's that good.
Really?
I mean, first of all, he's missed most of the last two years of injuries. That's the first red flag. And second of all, he's one of those guys, at least early in his career, where his sack totals were based on he would have like 2 monster games a year.
Jordan Cameron?
I wouldn't because of the injuries.
3 concussions in 2 seasons. Yeah. They're going to, you know, whether that's Thomas, whether it's Clay, there's a few tight ends that if Cameron, you knew he was going to be healthy. The guy averaged over 17 yards a catch. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt he's a major upgrade from what they've got as a receiver. But we'll see where they put all their chips when it comes to March 10th. All right, we will see where you think they're going to put their chips. Who do you think is the most high-profile player that the Jags will make an offer to, or at least go after, in free agency? That's the fan feedback question of the day. We'll get to your responses coming up next on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. By the way, Jaguars.com Live today are going to feature Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network, NFL.com, along with Paul Pozlesny, coming up here at 12:30, I believe, with John Osier and J.P. Shadrick. Live from this very studio that we sit in right now. Fan feedback spotlight time brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking Jaguar fans daily what drives you today. We asked you less than a month ago until the start of NFL free agency, who's the most high-profile free agent that you think the Jags will actually pursue this year in free agency? Not who you want to see them pursue, but who you think they will pursue. Maybe it's one and the same. Tony, do your job and tell us who they are.
Here's what we got from @RSJaguarCobb. If he reaches free agency, from Cam, we got Brian Bulaga. From Brian, Dez, if Cowboys are stupid, Cobb, though, most likely to hit market and wear black and teal. From Mike, Devin McCourty. From Eric, not sure if they will, but Randall Cobb would be great, great fit, veteran leader and punt return man. From Kevin, going to be a little bit different than everyone else. I think DeMarco Murray will get a call. From Brad, we got they should make an offer on Jordan Cameron and save a draft pick. From Isaiah, DeMarco Murray. From Michael, Devin McCourty, Julius Thomas, Randall Cobb, or Pernell McPhee. Maybe all of them, according to Michael. From Nick, Devin McCourty need that deep safety in Bradley's defensive scheme. Hashtag makes everybody better. And from Daniel, answer to the question of the day, the best available offensive lineman.
All right, some on Facebook, McCourty, Iapati, DeMarco Murray again. I don't think McCourty has a prayer of getting out of New England. That's my guess, anyway, or informed guess. I don't think they'll, you know, I can't see them going down the DeMarco Murray road unless it's like Ryan said, 2 weeks in and nobody's calling because he's priced himself out of the market. Does he have to take, you know, less than he expected?
We'll do it.
Yeah, a few guys have thrown Mark Ingram's name out there. It's going to be interesting to see what the market is for running backs because, you know, it's not that expensive a way to go. I mean, $3 million on a salary cap that's rising the way it is. If you pay a guy $3 million, you can easily absorb that if you think he's a significant upgrade. A few people have suggested Ryan Matthews. Ryan Matthews can't stay on the field. I mean, you know, you're talking about the poster child for the most off-injured player. It may not line up with reality, but the man, it seems like every time you look at him cross-eyed, that Ryan Matthews is pulling something. Cobb or Thomas, here, one Jason said, offensive line, Iapati, Doug Free, Bulaga, or Hudson. Hudson's a center for Kansas City. I don't see them going that route. Again, I don't see them spending a ton of money. I think they could bring in, Ryan, a veteran on the interior of the offensive line. I just don't think it'll be a high-priced veteran.
Correct.
On the interior of the O-line. If they in fact, you know, we sit here like, man, JPP, Cobb, Julius Thomas, Bulaga. Is that too much to ask? It's only four. They got him a lot of money. It's only four. That's only four guys. I would take all that right now. I don't know.
Say, don't you figure Green Bay is going to like prioritize one over the other, and the Jaguars will take the other?
They'll try to take the other, yeah. Certainly. I don't think, you know, that'll be the question. What do they do? Because Cobb, I don't know if they've got the easy answer for his replacement on the roster. They have a guy like Devontae Adams, but he's not a slot guy like Cobb. And we talked about this with Osier on Monday a little bit. They drafted three wide receivers last year, and Jared Aberderis was supposed to be, you know, an intriguing slot option, and he got hurt early in the season. So they didn't get to see very much of him. And Jeff Janis never made it on the field, a very fast guy. So I don't know if they know enough of what they have in those guys, but you know how Green Bay is. They're like Pittsburgh, you know, a few organizations. They're not going to overpay for too many guys. They have a lot of money tied up in Jordy Nelson, obviously in Aaron Rodgers, a couple of defensive players like Clay Matthews. You know, can you have another one of those top end of the market deals for a wide receiver?
I mean, that's the Jags' best hope, is that use Green Bay's philosophy against them.
Right.
You know, and say, hey, we're going to pay 130 cents on the dollar for this guy, but you're not going to pay 80, so we're going to take him.
Right.
And this guy's going to decide to come down here.
Well, that'd be fine with, I think, just about everybody. What is he, 25 right now, something like that, Randall Cobb?
Mm-hmm.
Telling you, it's the return game aspect of it on top of everything else that makes him so intriguing, I think. Tristan said, why not Justin Houston? Well, yeah, if he doesn't get the tag, certainly. Why not Dez Bryant? Well, why not?
Demaryius Thomas.
They're right. There's a group of them that we don't expect. I can't. There's no way that Justin Houston's not playing for the Kansas City Chiefs next year.
No.
Just don't see it. You don't. Guy came within an eyelash of breaking the all-time single-season sack record, and as young as he is, and obviously a perfect fit for what they're doing there in Kansas City. I don't see that happening. Any way, shape, or form. I believe we got CJ on the line before we close things out. Hi, CJ. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I was just calling in response to when you guys were talking about the Jaguars and the draft. Dude, I feel like we have to get Amari Cooper. I feel like he is what Justin Blackman was probably supposed to be for us. And I'm just presuming Shorts and Blackman aren't going to play next season.
Okay.
So I'm just looking towards the future, man. I mean,
or at least here they're not going to play.
Right. That's what I'm saying. At least here they're not going to be playing for in a Jaguars uniform. So to me, this is the time when you're going to have a chance to get that top guy at that top position. Not the best available project, the best available player. Go ahead and just make that move, man, and that way, you know, if Bortles doesn't do what he needs to do next year, that way you can't say, well, they were only second-round receivers. Let's see if we get somebody in the first round next year. No. I mean, go ahead and just do it now while you got the chance, because we don't really have time to wait. They have to win next year. So
right, which, though, is why I think, CJ, there's so much talk about Randall Cobb and Jeremy Maclin and these guys, because even if you bring in Amari Cooper, guys, maybe he's like Odell Beckham Jr. and he hits the ground running. Maybe he's like Reggie Wayne and he takes 2 or 3 years to show you what he's really going to be in the National Football League. I'm not saying he's a direct comparison skill wise to either one of those guys, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you got three guys who are going to be among your top four or five in your depth chart going into their second year. Mm-hmm. And none of them, with the exception of Hearns, really played a full season. And even then, nobody was a day one starter, play 16 games for you kind of guy. So there's a lot of growing still to do. You bring in a Macklin, you bring in a Cobb, you bring in a Torrey Smith, and all this conversation about Amari Cooper is a moot point.
That's, and yes, I mean, if we're sitting here March 20th and they didn't sign any of those guys, I still think it'd be a stunner. But
right,
so
wouldn't be the most likely, but it wouldn't be as shocking. You sign a guy that's considered one of the top half dozen wide receivers on the market, and you can forget about that
yes.
happening. All right, for you, what do you got coming up this weekend?
Not a whole hell of a lot.
No.
Couple things we'll plug is. Hayes started in Tuesday's paper. He's going to have a weekly draft insider, which looks at a position a week, other news and notes, just, you know, some good stuff each week. And then next week we'll have State of the Franchise coverage in Wednesday's paper, and then we'll have 4 or 5 days straight of combine coverage.
There you go. And we've got Valentine's Day coming up Saturday.
Yeah.
Got a one-hour gift certificate or a gift certificate for a one-hour massage from Massage Envy. And your loved one will be very appreciative, and they will show their appreciation any way you desire. I'm quite sure if you present them with a coupon for a one-hour massage at Massage Envy, it can be yours simply by calling 641-1010. Be caller number 4 right now. We'll hook you up with that. You can also visit 1010XL.com for more outstanding Valentine's Day gift ideas. So thanks to the folks at Massage Envy. Somebody is going to hook that up with Tyler here in a minute at 641-1010. Thanks to Ryan O'Halloran and Fat Tony today. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We wrap up another edition of Jaguars today. Less than a month from free agency, just a few minutes away from XL primetime on 1010XL 92.5 FM.